Hey, sweetie.
I fall into you.
Oh, no. You know, that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a soft sport.
I'm going to be a man, and if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. This man just gave me a job. I'm not signing that shit.
There's a lot I got to say, but I ain't going to do it here because it's free to hear. I ain't going to curse.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to NBL Pocket Podcast. I'll quickly introduce myself. Joseph Corr is my name from Stats Perform Media. I'm joined by
Andrew Kenyon. You can find out more about me at andrewkenyon.com. But I'm pumped to be talking basketball today. It's a beautiful day in Perth. I'm excited.
Absolutely. On the top of it, I just want to say, if you're thinking about, if you like the podcast and want to get more involved, Patreon is where to go, NBL Pocket Podcast. And we're coming into Christmas. If you think about buying a book, there's a new Gaze book come out about Lindsay Gaze. I think that'll be on Booktopia. Use the link in the description. It helps the show. Blah, blah, blah.
I was looking for stocking stuffers the other day. I might have to go back online and jump on that.
Books. It's going to be a hot Christmas. You know, nothing like reading a book by the pool. And we're going to talk about a bunch of things today, Andrew. Bogut retires, Scotty Hobson, Tony Crocker, Will Magne, and the Wildcats. First thing, Andrew Bogut retires. I think I speak for both of us. Both of us when I say great career. Wish him well.
Yes, yeah, great career. You know, and probably hurt by injuries along the way, you'd have to say. Imagine how good he could have been if not for the, breaking the elbow on that.
Ankle, back, arm, take your pick.
Leg, didn't he snap his leg?
With the Cavs, yeah. Boy.
Yeah, like just an all-round, like he meant a lot for Australian basketball at a time when we didn't have a lot to cheer for, I would suggest. And I think the fact that he actually came back to the NBL in the last couple of years and finished it off here, I think that was pretty big for the league as well. It was a real tick of authenticity for the NBL. Mm.
Have you listened to the podcast in which you retired? Have you heard that yet?
I have not. Look, I don't go out of my way to listen to a lot of what Andrew Bogut says. I prefer to watch him on the court.
Fair enough. What do you think about that way he did it, retiring through the podcast, the Rogue Bogues podcast? It's a unique take.
Well, it's managing the message. You know, you don't let journalists or reporters get between you and the story. So I guess it makes sense. Sort of on, you know, it's on brand for his approach, yeah, I would say.
On brand is a good way to put it. I think, but with the journalist thing, like, I think when you speak to a journalist, like you're talking to a guy who's a writer or sometimes orator, maybe both, it's a chance to sort of whittle your thoughts and have a conversation with someone who's, you know, in the business of, you know, articulating a story. But yeah, it's you certainly got a rough, the honest approach from the podcast. It was a good listen. I heard it. I really enjoyed it. One thing about the Rogue Bogues podcast, it's split into four parts. One's going to be sort of stuff about current basketball stuff. One's going to be about his journey through basketball. And then one's going to be political stuff and then something else. I forget, but it's – no, it's going to be split into three parts, sorry. But I think they missed an opportunity to split it into four or maybe five. I forget how many. Because they could have done one part of it that's called, instead of Rogue Bogues, Randy Andy, sex tips, a call-in line, like a love line. Remember when those were popular on the radio? If anyone's listening who produces a podcast, just a thought. Yeah, Bogut giving relationship advice.
That would be amazing. I'd just imagine what he would have to say. I don't think he'd hold back.
No, I don't think he could. I put out a tweet. I said, Bogut cries wolf, because he kind of, in lead up to it, said, oh, you know, I'm going to be telling everyone where I'm going to sign. I'm going to be telling everyone where I'm going to play basketball. And then he didn't. Cried wolf. Do you think that's a fair description or a bit curt or rude?
No, I think it's probably fair. I would have described it probably as like the LeBron James,
decision.
Thank you. My mind went blank on it for a moment. But an idea that sounds good in theory, and you think, oh, this is going to be great. And
like a peekaboo. Where am I going to sign? And it kind of
backfires. You know, you end up with a bunch of Cleveland kids sitting around you as you tell them, I'm ditching you for another city.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as opposed to having a podcast the next day to say, I'm signing with nobody. It's a bit of a...
Yeah, I know. It was like when a magician pulls the tablecloth from the table, but everything stays on. Just on Bogut, I also said in the tweet, missed 39% of his NBA career. 3-9. Yeah, a lot. Wow. That's maybe just the regular season. I think he had a decent sort of turnout in the playoffs when his teams made it. I didn't highlight that to rub it in. I really highlighted that to, as we spoke about before, show how badly this guy was beat up. Like how he, this guy had injuries to everything. And in the podcast, he described his injuries, and more importantly than the injuries themselves, is the constant pain he's in now. Yeah. And it's, you know, sciatica pain, it's ankle cleaned out, it's two surgeries this offseason. I felt like it was like just one punch off the other. I felt really bad for him listening to the podcast. And if you haven't heard it out there, you really take the time to see the toll it was on this guy's body. It was brutal.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put it in my queue of podcasts to listen to. I think I'll have to
definitely
change, at least give it a try. But the thing that strikes me about that is that I went to the gym. I go to the gym twice a week because, you know, I want to maintain peak physical fitness. I was doing some lifting the other day and pulled a muscle in my back / neck.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right. It's all right. You know, these things happen when you're lifting huge weights like I am. You pull a muscle, and next day I was the biggest wimp anywhere. You know, I was like, oh, my neck, can't move, complaining to my wife, oh, I'm in pain. You know, and that's me, like one little pulled muscle. Now, imagine living a life where you've had all those basketball injuries and it does. I do have to appreciate the pain that these guys go through, and they get paid a lot of money.
Especially the bigs. I make a clear distinction between the bigs and the smalls. The bigs seem to really cop it bad.
Yeah,
for good reason.
You know, so they get well compensated, but you still, you know, like that those dollars in the bank don't help
you with $117 million
feeling right. Actually.
I'd be like, oh, my shoulder's a bit.
You've just underdone my argument because when you say, if you're talking 1 million, I might say,
that's US, by the by.
117, actually.
Yeah, it's career earnings. Mm.
Yeah. That brings up the whole issue of economics and sport. And that's a whole other theory I have that I don't have time for today.
Yeah. Tell me about it. I also said the episode was good. It was a really good listen. It was that. And I said there was a usual combination of honesty and passive aggressiveness we've come to expect from Bogut, because he did in the sense of it, take a swipe at journalists and stuff in his, you know, typical Andrew Bogut way. Yep. I do want to tell a quick story, and if you'll indulge me, it's not too long, but
I'd love to hear it.
I was working in a production company, and I was hot desking or sharing a office with another production company, a well-known production company in Australia. They're one of the major TV production companies. If you turn on TV, it's one of those, but I won't say which one. Anyway, this was a couple of years ago, and they had made a number of redundancies, maybe the best part of 30 to 50. From multiple divisions, you know, a little bit of daytime TV, a bit of radio sector, a whole bunch of things. Anyway, and in a way, they just sort of bled the stone. You know, they just slowly, they didn't, all 50 didn't leave at once. They slowly, you know, five would leave from this division, or five would leave from that show, or three from this show, you know, whatever. Anyway, it was getting down week after week, and it was just slowly culling over time. It was terrible. It's like getting shot in the gut 50 times instead of one to the head.
Nice.
Anyway, it gets to a couple of weeks, and there's one guy left. One guy would have been in his mid-50s. Yeah, it was clear that he'd been there a long time. This was, and he was just before retirement age. It was clear that this was going to really hurt this guy, and I felt terrible for him. Anyway, he's sitting at his desk, and it's the last day, and like clockwork, he's working till 4.
Does he bring his lunch from home, and is he eating a sandwich, just, cutting into triangles?
I don't know what he did for lunch. I didn't notice. I certainly started watching him late in the afternoon as it was approaching 3, 4, 5 o'clock.
Okay.
But 4 o'clock comes, and like clockwork, pencil goes down. Like, so they've just bled, dripped out every last bit of work out of him. At 4 o'clock, the cardboard box comes up on the top of the desk. He's packing up his life. This is dire. It's brutal. And he packs it all up. The ticker 5 comes, and you see him look in the box. He turns around to look at his colleagues. He's the last one left. He must be the accountant or something. They needed him just to stamp the redundancies. It's brutal. He stands up. He looks around for someone to like, he's probably been there 20 some years, maybe more. I don't know. He looks around for something, a pat on the back, a well done, a handshake, an apology. I don't know. He doesn't get it. He looks around. I'm looking at him because I can't look away. And we meet eyes, and I kind of give him the nod like, yeah, that's really rough, pal. And I gave him the little thumbs up, and he kind of gave a nod. He picked up his little cardboard box, and with the quietest dignity, shoulders back, he just walked out. He didn't slap anyone. He had every right to turn the place upside down, cuss out whoever was around him. He just picked up his stuff and he left. And that is a story that has stayed with me forever. And, you know, I look at this retirement from Bogut, and, you know, he's getting adulation from everywhere. Like, it's a tough life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I got a bit of negativity for what I said, and maybe rightfully so, but, you know, it's retirements are brutal, and that's probably the worst amongst them.
Yeah, and look, retirement's not fun, especially I think for a sports guy as well, because you kind of have this early retirement and then you think, well, now what do I do with my life?
It's such an insular life, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and you've had everything, like, especially you, so much, especially if you're coming straight from the NBA, he's had a bit of a transition, but your entire life taken care of for you, essentially.
You do a couple of things each day, you know.
Yeah.
Eating, lifting, playing, recovery.
Yep.
For a long time. Yeah.
And now you have to reinvent yourself to do something else, because you can't sit around for the next 30 years, can you?
Exactly.
You've got to do something. So it'd be interesting to see which direction Andrew Bogut goes as he carries his cardboard box out of the Sydney Kings office.
But I go back to the
Larry O'Brien trophy sitting inside it.
I go back to the passive aggressiveness, because on the way out, like in typical Bogut fashion, which love it or like it, you know, like it or dislike it, he took a swipe on the, you know, like he goes, quote unquote, journalists on the way out. And as a guy who's a reporter, works with, you know, quote unquote, internet journalists, there are some great guys and girls doing it. And I don't know, it was that dig on the way out, you know, the, like the guy with the cardboard box could have turned around and spat venom. You know, just kind of, and I don't know. I just didn't care for the tearing down of the sector. You know, like it's already a sector that's on its knees, and it's taken food out of the mouths of myself and friends and colleagues. Yep. So I was like, oh, you know, most of these people are just trying to eke out a living before they're tapped on the shoulder and unceremoniously SHIT canned. So, you know, no say in the matter. You know, no production, no fanfare. So. You know, it's.
Are you telling me that there is not the ability to earn $117 million in sports journalism?
No, I know. Only 115, which is, it's just not the same.
It just doesn't make sense.
But the outpouring on Twitter, boy, I can't imagine retiring and just everyone's like, you did it. You are amazing. Boy, I'd be the worst person in the world if people would slap me on the back that much. I would just, it goes straight to my head. I'm terrible.
It would, me too. Don't worry. I retired from my social comp and I didn't get anything. my guy said, well, basically you got to buy the beer this week.
Just a cardboard box and a kick in the guts. Listen, my favorite thing on Twitter is people shoehorning themselves into the Andrew Bogut retirement. Like, oh, I saw him at, you know, Andrew Bogut, great career. I'll never forget the time I saw him at the supermarket. We didn't talk, or I saw him shooting on a court one time, but we didn't say anything, but we had a connection. It's like, I love when people shoehorn themselves into a retirement or tragedy. You see it with death sometimes where it's like, oh, Kobe Bryant, you know, I can't remember the time I had this reaction to it. JJ Redick had a big spiel about this on his podcast, which really made me laugh.
We're all the center of our own world.
You know,
we're the leading character.
Makes me laugh. doesn't surprise me. I have a question for you, Andrew. Would you have helped an NBL team in NBL, what is 21, future?
Sorry, what was that? What would you?
Would he have helped a team in NBL 21 of real significance? Would he have been an NBL second teamer again, quote unquote?
He could have been a good player on the second unit, I think so. The only thing that would cast doubt is because all the other... We had the couple of seasons where everybody responded to Bogut by bringing in a big.
Yeah, that's true.
And this year that's all gone away. So he would almost have been a island unto himself. So whether that would actually be a help or a hindrance, be interesting. But a second unit, 10 minutes a game, that would
10 to 20. Yeah,
that'd be great.
Looking at the first year, NBL 19, then looking at NBL 20, like it was a steep downward trajectory for his minutes. And I'd be interested to ask him the question, like, were you overplayed under Andrew Gaze? That would be a question I'd ask him, because he played a lot of minutes in 19 and then his body really took a hit this year, only played the 20 minutes per game, which is probably a good number for him. But and he was, you know, backing up Kick It in the crunch time. So, and bless him, he was moving like a cupboard out there. Like in a cupboard, when you're moving it, you sort of go leg to leg.
Yeah.
Commendable. But yeah, he would have helped the team, but I think in the role you're talking about for sure.
Yeah.
But I criticized him for sitting those games and not traveling to New Zealand. I kind of regret that now, hearing the podcast and the pain he was in. I feel a little bit shitty about that.
Well, he could have done a podcast at the time and explained himself.
That's true. I want to go further more on this. Like, how would you categorize his NBA career? What one word would you use to sum it up? I know that's a lot to put on you, and I'm happy to give my answer first if you need more thinking time.
Yeah, you go ahead. I think I've got one, but you go ahead.
I'm going to say Kintsugi. Ooh. Do you know what that word means?
No, I do not.
Japanese for golden joinery, the art of embracing damage. And I come to this word because of a great set of video essays by a guy by the name of The Nerd Writer, in which he talks about a whole bunch of stuff. But in this, he talks about kintsugi, where the Japanese, let's say they have a cup and it's damaged or breaks, they repair it with gold and they embrace the damage. They embrace the injury. And I think that sums up Bogut's career. Was trending. He was a third team All-NBA when he got hurt, that with the elbow. And then from there transitioned into something different and did it with a degree of grace, elegance, sophistication, and effectiveness. So I would say kintsugi.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Now I've got to follow that.
Kintsugi. You can see why I went first. I was so eager to spit it out.
Man. All right. Well, mine is probably not one word. Mine's like a little mini sentence. Yeah, it's probably a story of what could have been. I remember him coming out of college and he was just developing a bit of a three-point shot. Right. He was not bad. And so he's this big guy, you know, before the era of stretch fives and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he kind of straddled it, didn't he? Because he could do a bit of both. The passing was certainly stretchy, but not the shooting so much.
Yeah, so he was showing some potential there. He had skill on both left and right hand near the basket. Mm-hmm. He was just really, really dominant and athletic. And then he had those injuries, and it basically just meant that we only ever saw sort of half the player he could have been, because his whole one side of his body was basically trashed. So he could hardly shoot free throws after that. He, you know, ended up being a very much post up back to the basket only sort of player.
Yeah, rim runner, like catch and dunk type.
Yeah,
guy.
Yeah. Really just playing off a left hand essentially for a lot of the time.
Free throw struggle. That was a struggle. When you start missing free throws, like where do you fit going at the end of games and, you know, getting hit and fouled? Like, you just, it's a totally different conversation when a player who can hit free throws is going into the lane.
Yeah.
Like he could. But I mean, he was a guy who, you know what I liked as well? He was one of these rare bigs who, when he went to the hoop, he finished hard. He was looking to dunk it every single time. I think it's part of the reason why he got hurt so much. He finished hard at the rack.
Yep.
And look no further than those 2004 Olympics where he was just going at the hoop like a madman. How would you categorize his NBL career? One word to sum it up. And don't feel bad because I left this blank for a long time.
Oh, gee.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, go on.
And I'm throwing these on Andrew, which I feel a bit bad about. But
I don't feel that bad.
The word I came for was wistful, vague or regretful longing. I felt like, and that's part of why with the podcast where it was like, oh, I'll be signing somewhere. Oh, no, I'm not. I was like, I thought you were going to play on and that was going to be more fun than retiring. So, you know, I get this regretful longing where I'm like, that NBL 19 and then NBL 20 was such a disappointment the way it ended with COVID and sort of the championship kind of just being delegated fairly, but delegated nonetheless. I was just like, It needed a third year. The redemption story is the best story, and there will be no redemption.
Yeah, I don't really have a word for his career. I almost feel like it's a situation where, like, I never got to see Queen perform live, the band Queen. And yeah, that's a regret. Well, not a regret, but it's a situation I deal with.
I mean, what's his name? Brian May would say they're still a band, but you mean the Freddie Queen.
Freddie Mercury Freddie Queen, Queen, you know, like, you know, the legit Queen. Okay.
Have you sorry to depart and interrupt, but did you know that Sacha Baron Cohen was going to make a Queen movie? And he was in conversation with the band and they said, like, well, the band goes, well, obviously the film would start with Freddie dying. And Sacha Baron Cohen's like, I'm sorry, what do you mean? He goes, well, yeah, because the movie's, most of it's going to be about how we kept going after Freddie, right? And he's like, no. But sorry, you're saying.
Well, I feel much the same, right? Queen finished when he died, right? In that story?
No, of course.
So anyway, so I never saw Freddie Mercury's Queen. That's right. Me like never seeing Andrew Bogut in the NBA. I did get to see a Freddie Mercury tribute act at a dinner. Mm-hmm. At a dinner performance one night, and it was very good. He was excellent. I was enthusiastic. I enjoyed the show. But deep down, I knew I wasn't seeing Queen. I was seeing a guy dressed as Freddie Mercury. And I feel like this is a little bit like what we got with Andrew Bogut. I knew I was seeing sort of like an Andrew Bogut.
You saw glimpses, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I wasn't seeing the show.
So queen is the word you'd use to describe his NBL career.
He's going to love that, isn't he?
Or tribute. Yeah, I think that. I don't think he'd be upset about hearing that, because I think if he's not saying that to himself, I think he'd be kind of lying to himself. I think that's what – I think he really embraced his injuries at a point. It took him a while, but when he did, he was all the better for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I and this is from the Nerd Writer, where he says, you know, two Hollywood characters, one will turn the other and say, like, can't we just go back to the way we were? The irony is that's the ultimate impossibility.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But and look, I enjoyed the Queen tribute act. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I didn't enjoy it. It was great.
I loved Bogut in NBL 19. Yeah. NBL 20, not quite so much. A couple of games in the finals for sure, but NBL 19, he was everywhere. He was MVP. There you go.
Yeah.
How would you categorize his boom?
Undeserved MVP. Just throw that out there, but MVP nonetheless. Carmelo was undeserved as well. So,
what's the bigger undeservedness or greater that MVP or NBL second team last year?
Ooh, probably NBL second team last year. You could at least mount an argument for him being MVP.
Yeah, he had good numbers, man.
He controlled the team well. He led the defense.
Missed games.
Yeah.
No, I thought second team.
But that's
that was ridiculous.
Nah, that's crazy talk.
Whether it's Creek sliding up to a spot or Sean Long.
Yeah.
Anyway. Boom's career. How would you categorize his Boom's career if you could use one word to sum it up?
Controversial.
Yeah. I had painful, but yeah, why controversial?
Oh, just that he never seemed to let his work on the court speak for itself. He always felt like he had to have a say about everything that happened. And it's like, mate, we're intelligent people. We know what's going on here. We see it with our eyes as well. You're the, like, just bite your tongue, go out, and knowing what the situation is, you don't need to call out the corruption.
Exactly. And his last moment in a Boomer's jersey will be him storming off the court, slagging off FIBA.
Yep.
That's the last of note in the Boomer's thing. Is that a great legacy? It was a highlight. It was funny. It was interesting, but.
Yeah.
We talk about that, picking up your cardboard box with a quiet dignity. Is it that? I don't know. Do you want it to be? It's very personal. I went with painful because, boy, how many fourth place finishes? How many close losses? Like, as much as the refs had a hand in it, you know, that's sport. You know, what are you going to do? You're lost. You know, you're lost. You get off the floor. It's a brutal game. It never pretended to be anything else. How would you categorize his public persona? What one word would you use to sum up your impression of him as a person?
Immature.
Really?
Yes.
Why immature?
I think the way he takes on all these bizarro positions on Twitter, you know, Pizzagate, the whole, I think he might have said something about anti-vax. I'm sorry if he hasn't, but it feels like the sort of thing he might say if he hasn't. He just seems to embrace the
fact check that. Happy to wear pie on the face.
This tweet,
that,
yeah, this comment may be, unfactual
unsolicited or whatever.
Whatever. Put a warning on that. But
this has not been confirmed yet.
He certainly wasn't afraid to endorse and retweet and comment on.
Yeah.
Weird stuff that really doesn't.
Yes, I know. I think I know to which you refer. To whom you refer.
So I just think, you know, he was like, if he wasn't a professional basketball player and he said stuff like that, he would be written off as a total like loon, like whatever, mate, you're an idiot.
I think so. I think also with him and the social media stuff. I don't know. The other thing as well is it goes back to Crying Wolf. I remember having a discourse with him one time on Twitter, and he goes, I'm a sarcastic and a shit stirrer. And I think that's a pretty good description as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So I never knew when he was being genuine about that sort of stuff or whether he was putting out that stuff as irony or farce or what do you call it, satire?
Yes.
Or irony. I never knew what was going on. So in that case, I was like, well, do I dislike him for this? Do I not like him for this? Is this a ploy? You know, I never quite got that. And I don't know if that's a good position to be as a person or whatever, but
yeah. And then you might get blocked or you might not, you know, and yeah, it's like, am I buying into the joke? Like you say, is this a character?
Loads of money, you know, loads of money, the character, Harry Enfield, loads of money. Do you know?
Yeah.
Whereas like the people who were pro Thatcher and like wanted, you know, capitalism thought he was representing them. Whereas the people who were anti-Thatcher, thought he was like maybe sending up the sort of, you know, money crazed culture. So both Malcolm Gladwell talks about that in the podcast, both kind of took from it what they wanted. So it was erroneous, the point of it, because it cemented either view. And I think he was kind of that way.
Yeah. So I don't know. I still don't know to this day whether that's Andrew Bogut or that is Andrew Bogut.
It's like the Andy Coffin of basketball.
No, yeah. And maybe he's playing as all. Maybe he's that much of a genius that we've all been fooled.
The word I used was prickly. I love the word, firstly. It's got a swear word in there, but yeah, ends in Lee, it goes up. I think he spent his whole life trying to evade, or most of his basketball life, and which is supposed has been most of his life to this point. He spent most of that trying to evade defenders, teammates, selectors who at every turn were trying to tear him down or bump him off his course or whatever. And, you know, that showed. And I think he talks about in the podcast a little bit, how does a person shed that now 20-year-long anxiety and anxious and aggressive mindset? You know, and he talks about that in the podcast. And I really feel for him in that pursuit, because that's going to be really tough. That is a difficult gear to shift out of after 20 years.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was always the talk, wasn't it, when he was a young guy, that he just wasn't going to quite make it, that he didn't have what it
cut from rep teams at late age. Like, we're talking under 18s or something. Like,
yeah,
if you're
not
a good player under 18, it's kind of like, well, yeah, you're done.
And I think even then there might have been some comments about his attitude, or, you know, his willingness to buy into the team, you know, that kind of stuff that you have. So sometimes you're selecting, you're not always just selecting on pure talent. So that sort of thing has followed him.
Yeah, I agree. I will say on the Twitter with the thing, NBL Pocket Pod at NBL Pocket Pod, that's me exclusively. That's just me tweeting. Andrew has his own Twitter. I curate the entire Twitter just to.
Yeah, I keep asking for the password, but he won't give it to me.
No, you don't want it. It's cursed. ready to move on from Bogut?
Yes, yeah. But look, I will say, you know, I've probably slagged him off a little bit. I will say, still, excellent career, really great Australian sports person's career. Yeah. Well done. Better than either of us have ever achieved. So,
and totally unique. As much as you can say good or bad, I don't think you could say he was a boring player or unoriginal. That's for damn sure.
No, that's right. Not a cookie cutter.
Gave the finger to the NBA at one point, like saying it was full of shit. Like, you know, he was.
And one last memory, didn't he initiate the whole high five to nobody on the free throw line? I feel like he started that.
Oh. You know, he may have. I can't confirm nor deny.
But if he was the first to do that, that's a great gift to the sport of basketball.
The high five to no one.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do some research into that. One thing, another story that I like, when he came in and kind of saved the Sydney Spirit, do you remember that when he was still in the NBA?
That's right. Yeah.
When they were on the bare bones of whatever, they had like 550 people at a game or something ridiculous, less than 1,000. And he came in and they were about to fall, and he sort of propped it up by giving the players salaries and stuff. He would have been, you know, 23 or 4 at that time.
Yeah.
And he had money in his pocket, don't get me wrong, but still, he didn't have to do it, and he did. And that's a good thing. Scotty Hobson, you want to move on?
Yes. Yeah.
Scotty Hobson to United.
Big news.
NBL second teamer, despite missing 7 of 28 games in NBL 20. That's a lot of games
to miss. That's a lot of games missed. Yeah. That's right. He did have that lingering injury, didn't he?
And I looked at their win-loss stats, his stats in wins versus losses. 20 points per game, 50% from the field, 40% from three in wins, 16, 40, and 40 in losses. So he still kind of came to the party, but you could tell that this guy, when he played well, they won. When they didn't, you know, he's that type of player, I think you'd agree.
Yep. I love it when you do your research.
It's not much. It's a pretty lame stats, 4 points difference and 20 percentage points. And to get him back, it's only a 1-year deal. Machado and Oliver both signed 2 years.
Yep.
Hobson's 31. I guess he just wants to keep his options open. But
I was wondering if that's a Melbourne United learning from the Casey Prather situation. You know, like, we got a guy, he was injured, we had to hang on to him for 2 years, cost us a fortune, we're not going to do that again.
Good point. You know, that's really, that's I think that's more at play than Hobson keeping his options open. You would have thought at 31, he'd be like, geez, if I can get a 3-year deal here, I'll lock it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now next offseason, the deck resets, he's 32. And it's like, well.
Unless it's something to do with the 50%. Does he have a 50% pay situation?
No, because it's people who are on existing contracts.
Okay.
As is Cotton in that way, because he obviously opted out of that old one and renegotiated.
Right.
No, he's got his money. we did the power rankings last week. You had them in what, fourth?
Fourth, yes. I'm feeling so validated now.
I feel bad. I had them in sixth. Have they gone up any higher for you though?
No, not yet.
Nah. So still behind.
Still on the bubble.
Cairns and New Zealand.
Yep. But that could switch if they get a spot for another import, right?
Yeah, well, what they need is a mobile big, sort of a 20 and 10 guy, kind of like Sean. I had him in sixth. They obviously jump up. I'm flip-flopping them with the Hawks. Hawks from fourth. Yep. I'm taking the Hawks out, dropping them below the Kings to sixth, I think.
Oh, breaking news. You've heard it here first.
Yeah. I think that's where I've got them. I think that's where they sit, right on the cusp, depending on what they do with their big man slot, which we'll talk about. Before we talk about their big man slot, though, I want to ask you a question, Andrew. You're Melbourne United. You're Vince Crivelli and Hutchie together, yep. I know. You've got sitting across from you the agents for Scotty Hobson and Lamar Patterson. Who would you be more invested in signing and why?
Look, that's a good question. Both good players. I'm going to go Lamar. Just why? Because he's got a bit more all-round versatility, I think. Can get his points from anywhere on the court, really. Scotty Hobson, primarily an outside in jump shooting player, scorer. And I think you've already got that in Chris Goulding. And that's my big question mark about this team now is how do you share that backcourt with Goulding and Hobson?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see with the one Wilson basketball, how that gets shared around. I would go Lamar just because I think you're going to get more all over court performance from him.
Mm. I agree with that. I think Patterson also just the positional fit, like it really makes sense. But Cameron Goulding, Patterson, like, I don't think Patterson's a two. He's more of a 3-4. You kind of cover your bases in that spot. If Barlow goes down or is a bit hurt or regresses this year. Yeah. I think they would have wanted Patterson more. Yeah. I think they would have been in those talks surely. Also with McCarron at the one, I feel like Patterson's a little bit more of a distributor, a little bit more of a ball handler, can actually create more for others.
Yep.
However, I do really applaud and like Hobson's ability to he isn't the passer that Lamar Patterson is or the setup guy that Patterson is, but he commands more attention. You know what I mean? Like when he has the ball, guys are like, oh dear.
Yeah, you're on an island defensively, aren't you? It's like help.
Yeah.
Help.
So you do create that little bit more of a like space for others, which might be just as beneficial. I don't know, but I'm with you on this one. Goulding and Hobson are mirror images of each other, same height, size. Both want that real scoring role, you know. And this was an issue last year. Are those guys, Goulding and the locals, are they going to be willing to defer to their imports, Hobson and whoever the other one might be?
Yeah, and I've still got concerns about the point guard position for Melbourne as well. I don't see McCarron as a really legit point guard. Illy's a defensive hound. Mm. But I don't see him as a guy who's going to set the team up, distribute. I hope whatever offense they run, it's going to have to be fairly point guard neutral, I would say.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they can rely on brilliance coming from that position.
No, I agree. Let's go to their bigs. So right now in the books, they've got what? Barlow and Joel Achiuwa from minute getters of worth last year.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? And this is really a lens into a conversation about who.
Yeah, it doesn't strike fear, does it? I mean, that's a pretty light on front line. And I saw something the other day saying that Achiuwa has really worked out this season and he'd want to. He needs to put on some beef. But yeah, they're going to need. Well, I think you can go two ways. You either get you get like an Andrew Bogut style, just a monster in the middle.
Like Plumlee or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's not going to put up a lot of points necessarily, but he's going to create space and collect rebounds, kick back out. Or you go for the guy who's like another scorer, but probably hard to find.
Well, the obvious name that would come up is, and he's training with them, is Jock Landau, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all heard rumors he's training with them. There's photographs. That's no secret. I think they want that impression put out there.
Yep.
I'm looking at the date, Tuesday, December 1st. That means it's still late November in America, in the United States. NBA training camps start, what is today, tomorrow for them.
Okay.
Landau, by my account, doesn't have a training camp invitation. Landau, would he be the guy you'd give import money to and have it United over, like Cam Oliver or something?
I would. Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
you know, you know him better than
fan base. Yeah,
better the devil you know. You got the local story. Yeah, you'd be, you know what he can do. He's done it on the international stage. You know he can do it. So I'd take him. Yeah, Australian. You know, no
small with Barlow. Yeah, yeah.
And a chore. Assume he'd fit in. Oh, you'd be crazy.
I think also that fan base, that Melbourne fan base, really needs a more so than the other big markets needs an Australian talent. They can, through that prism to view the game, they need that. That's why Golding got a 3-year deal and good money in Melbourne.
Yep.
And they, more so than anything, you know, Perth, I think, is a lot more comfortable living through their imports.
Yep.
Ricky Graves.
Yep. It's a long history.
Long history of it, whereas Melbourne, not quite so much, and dating back to the Gays era. What about Landau not getting an NBA training camp? You kind of text me about this.
I'm amazed. Same. Absolutely amazed that other guys, you know, like Magne, I don't think he is as good yet as Landau. Like, he could be better, probably will be.
He's a bit younger, yeah. I think he's, you know,
early 20s. So he's raw. And I know you always recruit on potential. It's half the weirdness of the NBA. You never recruit the player you've got. You recruit the player you think you might have in 3 years, but you trade him before that time ever turns up. But yeah, I think he's quality. He's, you know, he's athletic. He's springy. He's tall, and he could, like, think about him as a bench player coming up in the NBA. I think he'd be perfect. Get up and down.
Just, I mean, if Tate's getting a deal, like, I think they're pretty comparable.
Yep.
But
Landau's taller.
Landau's a bit bigger, not as strong though, not as athletic, I don't think either. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think
not unathletic though. He's not Luke Longley.
No, he's not Luke Longley. No, that would be unfair. I think also with Landau, Magne's there, Tate's there, even Thon Maker is there. I mean, he drafted 10th. I think Landau has got the two stamps on him that any player with aspirations to play in the NBA cannot have. These two keywords associated with them. College senior and I've forgotten the other one now, and mid-20s, and hasn't, you know, if you're 25 and a college it's just like you've missed the window, you've done. That is just, for some reason, NBA officers just go, oh, we couldn't possibly sign you to a veterans minimum and you give us 3 years of good production. Ugh, we'd rather hit a home run or try and hit a home run with someone and totally whiff. Bizarre way they do their teams over there.
It's really strange, isn't it? Never quite understood it. Probably another reason why I don't quite gel with the NBA in the way that most do. Just weird.
His agent's got something to answer for, don't you think? I just think if he hasn't got a training camp tryout. Now, maybe he's turned it down, but we were talking about this. If he's got an offer to go to an NBA team, you don't turn that down, even if it's an unguaranteed training camp deal. No way.
Nope.
So what's his agent doing? Come on. That shouldn't be hard to get something like that.
Can I run my joke out again though that I hit you with when you asked me that question?
Give me the great
day. Like, you know, who would ever turn down an NBA tryout opportunity? And I said Simon Dwight, straight back at you.
There's one. Yep, good. Thanks. Both funny and true. Done with Melbourne United.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to Adelaide.
Oh, Adelaide.
Tony Crocker's gone to Adelaide.
What you thinking on this one, buddy?
Well, let's look at Tony Crocker, 85 years old, Australian character actor, television personality, and singer. Oh, sorry, that's Barry Crocker.
That's
sorry.
Barry.
Wrong one. Get my Crockers. I think they're related, though. No. Tony Crocker, 6'6", 98 kilos, 33 years old, most recently from the Turkish League, not the Euro League, the Turkish League, 10 points per game, you know, pretty good splits, 44, 38 from the field, blah, blah, blah. We haven't seen this guy play. I'm assuming you don't watch the Turkish League, do you?
No, not religiously. I gave up on the Turkish League a few seasons ago.
Just looking at the bare bones of it, 6'6", 33, thoughts?
Yeah, can I swear for the purposes of a good gag? Of course. Okay, I think it's what a crock of shit.
Perfect.
By
all accounts, great guy, great neighbor. But yeah, just 33 playing on the wing.
It's look. Can I give a shout out to Matthew Hollenby on Twitter?
Yep.
At Hollenby21 underscore M.
Good conversationalist of the NBL. Always enjoy chatting to him.
Yeah. He came out. He tweeted us this morning just about this, and I think he's a little disappointed. He said they always seem to do this. He said he's got an Adris de Leon feel about it, which I think is a good call. I responded back to him and saying, you know, would you like some Ebiara on the side?
Nice.
So, yes, they Adelaide do seem to have a thing for older players that were perhaps in their prime a few years earlier.
I'm going to give him a chance. Listen, we're throwing dirt in the guy who hasn't played a second. Give him a chance. I always give these inputs about seven games, quarter of the season, and then we'll make our mind. But, you know, if someone had a gun to my head, like, do you think it'd be good or bad? I know which way I'm leaning. Like, I just look at where he's signed, where his career, where he's at, the way Adelaide have conducted their offseason, you know. And also, here's the thing that made me chuckle. I actually, hands went to the sides. Ha, ha, ha. I had a good laugh at this. Guess who his agent is?
Oh.
Same as Donald Sloan.
I was going to say, it's not going to be Lighthouse Sports, is it?
No, that's a safe bet. Boy, oh boy, that's a safe bet. No, I didn't actually take their name, but it's the same as Donald Sloan.
Oh, wow, he's got a package deal.
A handcuff contract. So I don't know if it's that bad, but I do think it's like, we've got an open spot. Who you got? Yeah, can we gave you good money for Donald Sloan. Come on, do us a deal.
Flip through the Rolodex and see who I can pull out. Oh, no. Yeah. I had a quick look. This guy's played in 9 different countries.
Oh, I just looked at the most recent. I didn't see the 9.
Yeah, he had 9 little flags next to his name. So Australia will probably be his 10th country. Like, so it's a well-stamped passport. You know, maybe he's just the ultimate hired gun. Maybe he comes in, does what's needed to be done, and leaves again.
I wish him well. I think if nothing else, they've recruited the right position. They needed a wing to help Jack McVay, but
yeah,
Crocker, good luck.
Look forward to seeing him.
Will Magne, do you want to go to him? Signs 2-way with Pelicans.
Yeah, good outcome. Great outcome. I feel like, you know, this is, you probably got a bit more to say on this, but isn't it? It's new, old news masquerading as new news.
This is ancient news. This is back from June or something when Boddy first dropped it of sorts.
It was always going to happen, wasn't it? There was too much buzz around him for it not.
Yeah, I spoke to Boddy. I had him on the podcast just soon after, and I had no doubt in my mind that it was happening in some way, shape, or form. I think Dallas was the big suitor, but I do find it funny. You know, it went from completely made up to now object fact, and I remember at the time people were like, no, it's made up. The agent has said it's not true. I was like, oh, the agent has. Oh, wow. Well, then.
A bastion of truth.
Just because they would never lie. I think Boddy said that at the time. It's like, no, I think there was a little bit of like, no, he hasn't signed. What are you talking about? I'm currently playing one deal off the other. Duh. but no, he hasn't signed. Of course not. No, there's no deal on the table that's basically just waiting for him to put pen to paper until we get fractionally more money. I thought that was kind of funny. But Pelicans, good situation for him. Like, won't go into a starting role, but kind of backing up Steven Adams, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Good little spot for him.
It's going to be an interesting team, that the Pellies this year.
They're going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
They are going to be fun to watch. And I like that Zion kid a lot. So
good for him. I hope he gets some meaningful time. I think – you know, not just get shunted into the G League. And
is he the one guy you'd take from the NBA? Like, if you're an NBA guy and you've got that perspective of potential and, you know, we're really swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
Is he the guy you would take from the NBA?
I think probably yes. You know,
there's any other real candidates.
You know, like there is, I still think Nick Kay is an awesome opportunity. But again, I think it's the age thing. I think,
His lack of athleticism as well, on a nuts and bolts level, like he has an odd running style. He doesn't have a great top speed. The bounce off the floor is not there. But, man, I'm a big believer in measure people on not what you think of them, but what they do. You know, you've worked 9 to 5 and this is the results of it. That means something. Yep. He is a guy, you could put him on any court in the world and he's going to grab, depending on his minutes, 3 to 5 offensive rebounds.
Yep.
And then a couple of defensive. And if you value that, then he's your guy.
See, I miss guys like that. Like, you used to get a lot more of those sort of players. Like, you imagine, you know, sort of Pat Reedy as well. Amazing footwork, no athleticism, but got it done. And you just don't really see guys like that so much anymore. And they certainly don't get the buzz around them. Everybody's looking for the next uber athlete. And that's put above everything else.
I have seen players who are good, crafty, and you're like, oh, he knows where it's at, but just tsunamied by athleticism. And I get that. But I think he's worth a flyer. And I just think there's also been this swing away from good analytics where they sort of go, well, you know, the stats say this, but it's like, well, play, you've got a good data point where, and also it seems to me that the only team in basketball on the planet that values offensive rebounds is the Perth Wildcats. And I look at where everyone's like, oh, threes and free throws are important and attacks at the hoop. Totally get that. That math makes sense. But no greater maths makes sense that if we have two shots at the hoop, our odds increase more so than any other strategy. You would rather have two shots at the hoop than, you know, one shot at the hoop that's either a layup or a three. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's the ultimate, it's got this bad reputation, but it's the ultimate goal should be to get as many shots at the hoop as possible. And the offensive rebounds, other than not turning it over, is the perfect way to do it. But yet the teams don't seem to value it as much. Bizarre to me.
It is bizarre. And there's, yeah, and you know, you see that in the NBA, particularly, you know, a shot will go up and the offensive team just run back. You know, don't even try and contest. It drives me crazy. I know I'm an old man now, but come on, get on the boards.
There is the argument that more three-pointers has led to longer rebounding, so it's not really about individual rebounding anymore. I actually don't buy that. I really don't. I think if you're a good rebounder like Kay, you can position yourself. There's a knack for it. There's a reading of the ball. I think Kay'd be effective.
And these guys aren't such bad shooters that the rebound's going to carom out to the three-point line. You know, they're not laying bricks. So anyway, but yeah, in terms of task of your question, yeah, I think Magnani would be the best out of the NBA, NBL. Nobody else springs to mind in terms of who you might take.
Other than like LaMelo Ball and that.
I'm thinking Aussies.
Australians, yeah. You want to talk about the Wildcats number four? What's going on there?
Yeah, just a little bit of a little nice news story for the week. I noticed the other day that the Wildcats have determined that they're going to set the number four aside only for local WA players. So it's, you know, I think there was no master plan behind all this, I don't think, but it's just the way it's worked out. And I think they've gone, this is a good idea for now and the future. And I think it's a one to be rewarded. I like it. It started off with Eric Watterson, 350 gamer for the Wildcats.
Watto.
Yep.
And still have nicknames on the back of the jersey, yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, JCTT, yeah, and Watto. They were all fantastic players. He was the original number four. That got handed on to Greg Heyer, another local Wildcat. And now Luke Travers has been taken up the number four.
Good on him.
So they've made it an official
policy
now that number four is reserved for local guys coming through.
Makes sense.
Which is, I think, cool.
Yeah, cool thing to do. Anything else going on in NBL circles or are we done?
I think we're done, buddy.
I think we're done indeed. I can hear motion in the background as well, so I'll leave you to it. Andrew, always a pleasure. Pretty good week for news.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine what it'll be like when there's games to talk about.
Oh, just on that, the NBL has got its schedule or is going to release its schedule soon. I think December 3rd was a date thrown around and, you know, early start in the new year. You can have all the ambitions you want, but you must have contingencies. What do you do when a player or a coach or a fan comes down with this thing? Because that you can have all the plans you want, print all the schedules, doesn't mean a thing. So they got to be good about this.
A plan never survives first contact with the enemy. 1, 2, 3.